This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 30th at 10:10 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like maybe this week, former President Trump will be indicted.
I thought that was supposed to happen last week.
I thought so, too. He took over the news cycle.
All I know is what I read in his fundraising emails.
You should diversify your reading. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters or shrewd politicians who take a stand one week and then waffle the next. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, the Ohio House Speaker now says an August special election is a possibility.
Huh. But first, if you want to vote in August, in May, or in November, you will need a photo ID to prove you are who you say you are.
Ohio's new voter photo ID law goes into effect April 7th. That means you can't just use a utility bill or a mortgage statement to prove your identity. You need an Ohio-issued photo ID.
Yep, you can use your driver's license or an official state ID, which you can get for free at a Bureau of Motor Vehicles office, and you can also use a passport.
For most of us, it's really not a big deal. Most of us already use our driver's license when we vote, but for a fair number of people, this new law will make voting harder. People with limited incomes, who don't have a driver's license, the elderly, who no longer drive, out-of-state college students.
Supporters of the new law say it will prevent voter fraud, namely voter impersonation, which is virtually non-existent. The Conservative Heritage Foundation reports only 26 convictions of voter impersonation in the country over the past 18 years.
That's 650 million votes, I believe, cast during
26
those 18
were
years.
Deemed to be illegally cast.
That's not a big number. Anyways, but it will mean a lot of changes for some folks who are used to just showing their utility bill or their rent statement or their mortgage statement when they go to the polls. They will now have to show their ID, and we'll see what kind of effect it has.
Yeah, the I'm going to be a troll. I'm going to vote early on April 4th and use my utility bill.
I want to do that too. I might do that myself.
Because early voting starts April 4th.
Yes.
And then this law takes effect April 7th. So you can vote early on the 4th, 5th, or 6th under the old rules with just a mortgage bill, a utility bill, whatever it might be. It won't have to be a driver's license. And I am curious how many people at where I vote, the Union County Board of Elections, will know this.
Yeah, I thought about doing that too. Franklin County, you have to, if you vote in person, you don't have to show your photo ID until the 7th.
Right.
Now, is it midnight on the 7th or is it like noon on the 7th?
Sure. I have no idea.
They're making it harder. Let's make it as hard as possible. Ohio is not alone in this. In fact, we're on the kind of the late side. 35 states require a photo ID. Georgia has it, and there's been no clear evidence that requiring a photo ID hurts turnout. Georgia has it. They've had record turnout the past couple of cycles with huge races for president, for U.S. Senate, for governor.
Republicans, if you listen to Democrats and you listen to, and many times if you listen to your own eyes, Republicans seem to do this to try to limit Democratic turnout. This is never a Democratic initiative, but you're right. It's never been shown that this limits Democratic turnout.
There was I forget which candidate it was, but there was a candidate in Pennsylvania who was speaking to a group,
right,
and he said, "We passed photo ID. That will help us in the next election." So it was sort of a Freudian slip.
He wasn't supposed to say that out loud.
Yeah, I don't think he knew he was being recorded, but he did say that, you know what they say about a gaffe? The gaffe is the truth by accident, and that's exactly what he said. But so that it is a strategy, I think you could argue, but they argue that it is to prevent fraud. And in the past, quite a few dead people have voted in the past. David Brinkley, in his book, one of my favorite political stories, he used to spend weekends with Lyndon Johnson out at Camp David, which was kind of journalistically questionable anyway. But he was anchoring the evening news for NBC. He would have dinner with Lyndon Johnson. He would tell stories. And Brinkley, in his book, says that Lyndon Johnson, when he was running for some office, lower-level office in Texas, they were going through a cemetery and writing down people's names. And they got to a tombstone, and the name was not legible. You couldn't read the name. And Lyndon Johnson said, "Damn it, this guy has as much a right to vote as anybody in here." So voter fraud has existed, but it's not widespread.
It's not widespread at all. And, you know, Republicans make the case that there are so few convictions of this because they say it's so easy to vote fraudulently. But again, there's no evidence whatsoever that there's any kind of widespread scheme to sway an election. I mean, again, you might have a person here and there voting for their dead mother, or I mean, things like that happen, but not to sway elections, certainly on a statewide or nationwide scale.
Yeah, now, you know, Democrats, progressives argue that the new photo ID law, these added restrictions, could actually suppress the vote more than by a larger number than what the fraud is out there. And you look at college students. The way it looks right now is out-of-state college students would have to get an Ohio ID to vote in Ohio. Right now,
If you vote in person.
So if you vote, say you're from Indiana and you're going to school at Ohio State University in Columbus or at Cleveland State up in Cleveland or at OU down in Athens, you could just bring your utility bill from your college apartment and just, or your cable bill from your dorm room, and say, I'm a resident of this area, I need to vote. Now you can't do that. You have to have an Ohio-issued ID, and if you get an Ohio-issued ID, that would nullify your home state ID.
Which could potentially complicate things like financial aid and any other reason you want to maintain your Indiana residency.
And OSU, for one school, is they're not recommending students. They're saying the safest way to make sure your vote is counted is to vote at your home address, your permanent home address, your parents' house.
Or by mail. They encourage people to vote by mail at home, whether that's New Jersey, Indiana, or wherever.
How many votes that is, I don't know. 16,000 out-of-state students at Ohio State, for example. How many of those students actually vote in Ohio on Election Day? We don't know. We're talking probably a few thousand votes there.
And it's unfair to them. They live here. I mean,
well, do they? That's the question.
Well, yes.
Yes and no.
Why? Why wouldn't they?
Well, no, I'm just saying they are. If you have two homes, so you live in Indiana, say,
right? But if you want to, if you maintain a residence here and you want to live here, if you want to vote here, and you sleep here, this is where you currently reside. That's what you should do. I mean, I've taken jobs in other states years ago, where I knew I was only going to be there a year, but I still got a new driver's license and maintained a residency there and voted there.
Yes,
that's what people want to do generally.
But if you're a college student from Indiana, you're not getting a new driver's license. You may not get new Ohio plates on your car. You're here for 9 months, which is more than half a year.
If you're a traditional student who goes home during the summer,
the argument is that, especially if you're voting on local property tax issues or issues that will last longer than your college career, should you be voting in those elections? The law has said, yes, you can if you're here. But their argument is that you're not really a permanent resident of Ohio. Yeah. You're a student resident.
I mean, the same goes for back home. Should they be voting on a New Jersey tax levy if they're living in Columbus going to college here?
Yes. Same holds true for folks in the military. If you're stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, but you're from Ohio, are you a resident of Fort Campbell, Kentucky? Yeah, you probably are for 3 or 4 years while you're there. So, but anyway, it is going to affect how college kids vote. There's also a lot of education that has to happen. I have not seen...
Yeah, how many people know you can get a free ID if you don't have one?
They have to be listening to us.
Right.
There's
no outreach campaign. There's no billboards about this.
Not everyone listens to us, unfortunately.
Probably better off for them.
But you would think the Secretary of State's office might put billboards up, take out
would
ads.
Would you, though? Would you?
Put out social media ads.
Frank LaRose doesn't have any interest in doing that.
Well, they should.
They should, yes.
So now voting organizations will be doing this. League of Women Voters will be doing this. Common Cause probably will be doing this. Certainly the Democratic Party will be doing this to help people. It's a whole new part of the voter organization effort, not just getting people out to the polls. Now it's getting them an ID to get to the polls.
And if you don't have an ID already, say you're lower income and you don't have a car, getting to the BMV alone is a pain in the ass. Like it's a whole thing. You know, like you might be a waitress and it's just a pain.
Yeah.
It's a hassle. I mean, most people have an ID, and people really, if they can, they should have an ID. Yeah. It's a good thing to have an ID. But 1 in 10 people in Ohio, by a lot of estimates, don't have an ID. That's 10% of the electorate we're potentially disenfranchising.
Potentially. How many folks, I'd like to know the study, how many folks who don't have an ID vote on a regular basis?
Yeah, I don't know. It might be fewer than the overall average.
Yeah, but either way, it's you're making it harder to vote. And this law does other things to make it harder to vote. It shortens the window with in which voters must apply for an absentee ballot to vote from 7 days before the election to 3 days before the election. Not a huge deal, but, you know, it's 4 days.
It's intentional. I mean, these are not coincidences that they're doing this. It also shortens the grace period for counting late arriving ballots from 10 days after the election to 4 days, and it prohibits county boards of elections from offering more than one drop box for fielding absentee ballots.
That's silly to me. I mean, for a county like Franklin County, where we are, is huge.
Everyone has to go to the main board of elections.
Everyone has to go to Morse Road, which is in the sort of the north, just the northern edge of the downtown Columbus area.
Yeah, if you live in Obetz or, Hilliard, or that's a hike.
That's if you have a car. It's a hike,
right?
And I take the bus from the southeastern corner of Franklin County to the center city. It's going to take you 3 hours round trip. It also eliminates early voting the day before Election Day. That's gone back and forth. There was a time where it was eliminated, then they brought it in. So now you can't vote early the day before Election Day. So that's tough for people who have to work on Election Day.
This is going to have to mobilize Democrats. I mean, Democrats are going to have to up their game, and souls to the poll will have to be out in full force. They're going to have to do everything they can to get people out to vote.
Yeah, and then that is still easier to vote in Ohio than it is in other states. There is no early voting in some states. So no early voting at all in some states. You can vote by absentee, but sometimes in many states you need to have a reason why you're voting absentee. You're going to be out of the country, or you're disabled or ill. In Ohio, it's still no-fault absentee voting. You have 30 days before the election to vote in person or absentee. So it is easier than some states, but the bottom line is, come April 7th, it will be harder to vote in this state than it was
on
April 6th.
That's the takeaway, that this is being done on purpose to make it harder for people to vote.
Or, they argue, to protect against fraud.
We'll be right back.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs. Photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast, White Lies.
Welcome back to Snelly Goster from WOSU Public Media. That state law that goes into effect next week regarding elections also does away with most August special elections. The reason? Low turnout, high cost, and complaints that local governments would use the low-profile elections to raise taxes.
This was really not very controversial when Republicans proposed this all the way back last fall when they passed this law during the lame duck session. But now, Republicans want to immediately change the law to allow for an August election to vote on whether to require a 60% vote margin to change the Ohio Constitution.
Last week, Ohio House Speaker Jason Stevens said this when asked about the prospects of such an election.
We just voted to not have those anymore just a few months ago, and the county election officials I've talked to are not interested in having it. I'm frankly not interested in having an election in August.
Well, things may have changed since he said that. He made a point to say on Twitter last week that he was 100% pro-life, but he was not for, quote, changing the rules willy-nilly at a whim when it comes to changing our Constitution.
This week, when asked by reporters, Stevens said the legislature does set the date and time and place of the election, so, you know, it's a possibility.
So from no interest to now, it's a possibility. In 1 week.
Who got to him? Just kidding.
I think, obviously, there's a tremendous amount of pressure from abortion rights opponents on Republican lawmakers to move forward on the 60% threshold election. And he may not have usually a speaker has great control over what gets voted on in the House. But if a majority of House members want this, which Republicans easily have, he may not have a say whether this gets to the floor.
Yeah, with the so-called discharge petition that Republicans are circulating now, the Marin faction from within the House are circulating what they call a discharge petition. Basically, it's a way to override the House Speaker. The House Speaker usually controls what goes up for a vote, but if a majority of House members sign this discharge petition calling for a vote on something, then the Speaker is superseded and it goes to a vote anyway. And so that's what the Marin faction, the farther right faction of the Ohio House Republican Caucus, is trying to do. They're trying to force a vote on this resolution to have an August election on the 60% plan.
So you have to watch those two dozen or so Republican lawmakers who backed Stevens over Merin to see where they fall on this. I am willing to bet a lot of money that they are getting a lot of pressure from Ohio Right to Life and other abortion rights opponents to back this petition. Because my guess is that nearly all of them are very much opposed to abortion rights. And if they want the support of Ohio Right to Life and those groups going forward, they have to support this.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the numbers. Republicans have a supermajority. They have a large majority in the House and the Senate. The Senate, it looks like a done deal.
Yes.
It's going to happen. Matt Huffman, the president of the Senate, wants it done. It's going to happen in the Senate. It's all about the House. And if Merin can poach enough Stevens reporters or Stevens supporters, as you say.
And Stevens has an out. He can say this is just the will of the House.
Right.
I don't like the idea of an August
election. That's
basically
what he's doing now.
Local, it'll put a tremendous burden on local election officials as long as – now, the state has to pay for this.
It's $20
million. $20 million. And this campaign will be – it'll be make for an interesting summer, and the campaign against it will be very easy. Lawmakers want to take your vote away. The reason why they're having it in August is because they're trying to lower limit turnout. I think it's a tough sell to the voters, both conservative liberal.
And they can't have it until August. They can't have it in May, and they can't have it in November because that's when abortion's probably going to be on the ballot. And so the time that lines up for them politically is August.
What it does, even now trying to play, 3D chess here, even if this proposal were to fail in August, say the 60% proposal gets on the ballot in August and it fails in August, the abortion rights supporters are going to have to invest in now two campaigns. The campaign in August to keep this at 50% plus one for the change of the Constitution. And then, if they get on the ballot, the November election to enshrine abortion rights in the Constitution. So there could be a strategy here where you're making them spend money and resources and efforts to win two elections to get this passed.
It's the old Julius Caesar war strategy. Have multiple fronts and wear down your enemy that way.
And it could, I don't know what the campaign would look like, but I think it's a tough sell to Ohioans to say, protect the Constitution from special interest when this is clearly being driven by a special interest.
It's all going to be about abortion. And ironically, all the people behind this have tried to make it not about abortion. They've tried to make it about this. They've tried to make this about limiting out-of-state rights. But I would strongly suspect in June, July, and early August even, we're going to see ads about abortion.
Yeah.
That you can vote to end abortion in Ohio by raising the threshold to 60%.
Yeah. Ironically, as we have said many times, they don't need 60% this time. They just need 50% plus one to require 60% on these future votes.
Quite a bit of snollygostering going on. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment. That is where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week.
Well, I think Ohio Secretary of State Frank Luo is maybe in the lead because he is going to win it again for saying he supports an August election for the proposed constitutional amendment that would increase the vote needed to change the Constitution to 60%. This is the same Frank Luo who a few months ago said he supported banning August elections because of low turnout and the huge expense.
LaRose says this is different because it's a statewide issue, not a local school levy that local officials are trying to sneak past voters. He argues this will get plenty of attention, which will drive turnout.
It will get plenty of attention. Does it drive turnout in the middle of August or early August? We shall see. If turnout is the goal, however, why not wait until November when we already have an election scheduled? Or even better, how about November of next year when we have an election for president on the ballot?
It's almost like they're wanting to keep abortion from passing.
It's almost like they're trying to sneak it past voters.
Anyway, Frank LaRose, you are our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week, you can email it to us at snollygoster@wosu.org. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you find us, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our audio producer, Eric French, and our digital producer, Michael DeVotis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.